a passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on the first Thursday in May. And, you know, like every first Thursday, I roll out the unleashed Matt Connerton. We just roll him right out, prop him right up, and turn his little key in the back and let him give us his insights and wisdoms on what's going on in the world today. Matt, hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. I'm just turning that key on your back right now. I noticed there was a little delay.
Well, you know, it sucks.
Yeah, well, you know, it, so as always in the first month of the first month of May, I think I'm getting ready to sing a song out of Camelot. My brain is not completely working tonight, but it's doing its best job, and we will all ask for patience. Merry month of May. So Matt and I are going to be talking about some of what's going on in the world on this show. We're going to try to give maybe a little spiritual spin or lens to it. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But I am a very firm believer that spiritual people need to be grounded into the world and understand that the world is their problem too, and they're not above it, and they need to be taking actions and making the world a better place. So that being said, our call-in number is 202-570-7057, and we will call it any time. We'll go to facebook.com/mydrkevin, M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N, and you will see tonight's show. You will we'll be posting some topics that we're going to talk about, and then we're just going to kind of run with it and see what kind of questions you come up with. So, Matt, first of all, give me a fill-in. How are you doing? What's up? And with the continued craziness that's going on, especially in this country and our political world today, what stands out to you as this month's version of what was the craziest piece of crap you saw happen coming out of Washington, D.C.? There you go.
Well, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches. There's always so much to choose from, but... No, but I think right now, I mean, the biggest thing is Bill Barr, his hearing yesterday and his not hearing today. Of course, he decided not to show up for today's hearing. And Nancy Pelosi is saying Bill Barr committed a crime. He lied to Congress previously when he acted like, you know, no particular concerns had been expressed to him by Bob Mueller over his report, you know, being misrepresented. You know, of course, Bob Mueller's, the Mueller report there seems to indicate 9 or 10 or 11, depending on who you ask, different instances where the president might have committed obstruction of justice. And, of course, Bill Barr initially presenting it to the nation in his summary is basically, nothing to see here. It's all good. Don't worry about it. And that seems to have caused a rift between Bill Barr and Robert Mueller. Apparently they are good friends, or at least they used to be. I don't know if they still are necessarily, but now Nancy Pelosi is saying, well, Bill Barr lied to Congress, and that's a pretty serious charge. To me, that's the most interesting part of this whole thing right now, is Nancy Pelosi accusing the Attorney General of having committed perjury. But as always, I mean, there's so much going on all at once.
Yep, it's hard to say. And sometimes the only thing that we could do is to keep our eye on what's important and pick out the things that we're getting screwed over on that are getting under the radar screen because there's, you know, because we're getting so, what's the old term they used to call it, baffled by bullshit out of Washington, that Trump continues to sign things and make things happen to, you know, and sometimes, you know, sometimes just screw over the people that, you know, really can afford it the least or have the least voice or the least thing. And he still keeps sliding it in. So what I want you to address, because you're better at this stuff than I am. You dive right in it. You swim in it like a porpoise swims in the ocean. So tell me, yes, what can Congress do? What can the House of Representatives do with this Barr situation? Because you know what? Mueller is going to show up and testify because the White House can tell them all he wants that they get to ignore the request. I don't see Mueller ignoring the request.
Yeah.
I think he wants to have his day in I think he wants to get his side out, so to speak. So what can Congress do? Do you know? And what can the American public do? Can we as people do anything?
Well, as far as Congress, there's a couple things in play. One is they can hold Bill Barr in contempt of Congress for refusing to comply with the subpoena. Because they were supposed to do that today, yesterday, the Senate, today, the House. But the other thing, and that would come from the House Judiciary Committee. And I think they'll do that. I mean, the other thing they can do in a broader sense is, if they believe, as Nancy Pelosi said, that he lied, that he actually committed perjury, which is a pretty serious charge, they can move to impeach him. As far as what can we the people do, it's kind of like I said to Chris before the show. I said, well, there's an election in 18 months. I mean, other than that, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they're. I mean, you know, if we want to put pressure on Congress to act on Bill Barr specifically, you know, we can certainly apply that pressure. But I mean, I think the most realistic thing is, you know, just to get Trump out of there in 18 months. And part of the reason I refer to that specifically is that's one of the things that Bill Barr said during his testimony yesterday. He said, well, there's a, you know, if you don't like it, there's a remedy for it. There's an election in 18 months. And he's telling the truth about that, at least.
So I'm sure you have at least passingly looked at the Mueller report, right?
Well, passingly, yeah. I mean, I haven't read the 400 pages of it. But, hey, I'm not sure anyone in Bill Barr's office did either.
There does seem to be that issue. So from what you know and what you've seen and what you picked up and heard in his testimony yesterday to the Senate, with, you know, blowhard Graham giving him as much cover as possible and not keeping the questions to what the purpose of the thing was supposed to be. Again, we're having the Republicans run interference, which I would like to think, I would really truly like to think is going to bite them in these upcoming elections, but I could be wrong. So what I want to do is, how much do you think Bill Barr did lie? And if so, how much did he lie and why? Was it just about protecting the president, or do you think something else is going on?
I think he lied, and I think it's about protecting the president. I think he's a partisan, you know, partisanship and ideology. Trump's, no pun intended, I promise, absolutely everything else. And I think he's a partisan. I think he has a history of being a partisan. And he was trying to protect Trump. Absolutely. I mean, I think now it's pretty clear. You know, at one point I might have said reasonable people can disagree, but now that we know about this letter, I think it's pretty clear that he did, in fact, when communicating what was in the Mueller report initially, his own summation of it. Yeah, he did try to kind of whitewash it and really undersold what was in it. And, you know, what was in it were a whole lot of instances where Trump did try to have Mueller removed without doing it directly. You know, I mean, at one point he told Don McGahn, get it done, and then Don and told Don McGahn and then give a statement to the media saying that Trump didn't ask him to do it, you know, and of course, Don McGahn, not about to, I mean, you know, smart enough to know better than to put himself in a position where he might end up in jail for Donald Trump, said, no, I'm not doing that. He complained to somebody. I forget who it was. Maybe it was Rosenstein he said it to, that Trump was asking him to do, quote, really weird stuff. You know, so there's quite a few instances that appear to be obstruction of justice. And as some have pointed out, it appears that the Mueller report really is a roadmap for how to prosecute Trump when he's not president anymore, because you can't, in theory, indict a sitting president, although I would think there would be exceptions to that. If, you know, a president murdered somebody, for example, I can't imagine that, you know, it would be the position of the DOJ, well, we can't indict him while he's president for murder. But, I mean, that's an extreme example, but I do believe it's on the DOJ's own website. But that also highlights something I was wrong about, Dr. Kevin, because all along I had said that I thought the Democrats were overplaying it a little bit with this whole, you know, wanting to enact legislation, which had some bipartisan support to protect Robert Mueller. I said all along I thought that was the one thing Trump's not going to do. He's not going to fire Mueller. He's not going to try to fire Mueller, because that would be, you know, even Trump is smart enough to know how politically damaging and what the blowback on that would be if he actually did that. I was willing to give him at least that much benefit of the doubt. And then now we find out from the Mueller report, nope, he actually he did try to have Mueller removed on multiple occasions. He tried to figure out a way to do it, in fact, to keep his hands clean, because he knew what he was doing was going to be harmful, but he was kind of conniving and looking for a way to get rid of Mueller without having to do it directly. But, yeah, I mean, he was definitely setting up his own Saturday night massacre scenario. And we know that now. And, you know, it's so funny, too, because, you know, I've always believed Trump didn't really want to be president. I think it's all a giant publicity stunt that got way out of hand. But now that he is president, it's important that he remains president, because if he doesn't remain president, he might be indicted. So he's got to win a second term at this point. I don't remember what your question was. There's so much to this.
That's okay. Well, there is so much to it. And, you know, it was, what can Congress do? What can the American public do? Obviously, vote him out of the office is one of the things. But, you know, there's a, I mean, we look as a side note, you know, there seems to be this whole, I mean, some people would say it's an obstruction of justice that he is telling people to ignore the subpoenas from Congress, and he's telling them don't show up. So, you know, that, you know, that he's fighting all of these things in the courts, a lot of which he's going to lose, but it would be after the 2020 elections. And so then what happens? If Trump gets reelected, what happens if he loses all these battles and all of this stuff shows up? I mean, and I think it's interesting that the Republican Party doesn't recognize how much on the hook they're going to be, because they have to know that he has broken laws and he's a shyster and he's been, you know, doing things. But, you know, even his staff, like, you know, the whole Kellyanne Conway thing of, you know, here again, she's broken the Hatch Act. She stands in front of Washington, you know, the White House in her official role, and she's dishing Joe Biden. And that's illegal. It's illegal. Why do they get away with this? It's illegal. It breaks a law.
Right.
So, I mean, like, I feel the frustration, I'm sure, that a lot of Americans feel of why can they publicly, so publicly, like Kellyanne Conway, why can she break this law and nothing happened to her? Because she's broken it like three times. And this was the most obvious.
Oh, sure.
And You know, is there no teeth in this law? What's the story?
Well, there probably isn't, but I think too, just, you know, the bar, again, no pun intended, but the bar has been set so low now, you know, I mean, because, you know, when you have all this behavior that approximately 40% of the country has decided they're absolutely fine with because, you know, we don't ever question daddy. You know, so if you're a Republican, you know, you don't question daddy, you don't question Trump. I mean, on anything, whether it's, you know, malfeasance or whether it's policy. I mean, you know, I was commenting on my show the other day. I thought the Republican Party was the party of free trade, free market economics. And then Trump came along and said, no, we're going to have all these tariffs. We're protectionists now. And then it's like the entire Republican Party said, oh, okay, I guess we're protectionists now. You know, that's what daddy says. So that's what we are now. I mean, you know, there is the larger issue there of, I always say it's the greatest, and I don't mean it hyperbolically. It's the greatest example of mass hypnosis I've ever seen, at least in my lifetime. You know, just the hold that Trump has on these people. You know, he can do anything and they're incapable of being disappointed or upset with him about anything. So, that's part of it. I mean, when you have about 40% of the entire American population that has decided that anything goes, as long as it's their guy, they're cool with it, then, you know, I mean, yeah, 40%'s not 60%, but still, that's a sizable number of Americans that have decided that whatever this guy does that's wrong is okay and excusable in some way.
Okay, we'll be right back with Matt Connerton. We got several other hot topics to talk about today. Call in 202-570-7057.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times.
Namaste, friends. This is Deva Pramala Mitten. And we wanted to let you know that we will be in America and Canada this May. We'll be coming with our Wings of Mantra World Tour, coming up the West Coast to Boulder, Santa Fe, Sedona, Scottsdale, Santa Barbara, L.A., Marin, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Escondido, Edmonds, and up to Canada to Victoria and Vancouver. You can find details on our website, devapramalmiten.com. Hope to see you there. Lots of love. Namaste.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Ohm Times. We always have conversations that just merrily roll along on the first of the month when Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed comes and joins us on the Dr. Kevin Show. Matt Connerton, you can listen to Matt Connerton Show between 4 and 6, 5 days a week on WMNH 95.3. Or you can go to IPMNation.com, and there you can listen to Matt's shows. You can listen to my shows. You can check out my Dr. Kevin and Friends 24-hour day, 7-day a week television station. So, Matt.
Yes.
Any other closing? Oh, sorry. One other thing. We are a live call-in show, 202-570-7057. So, Matt. So you don't know enough about the Hatch Act to know if there is just no teeth to it, but you're just assuming there's not. Because I can't believe, I mean, like, I understand that we've got a really low bar, and that's both with 1 hour and 2 hours. Still, if the White House is there on national TV breaking a law, How do the Democrats? I mean, this one guy has come out and really been crucifying Kellyanne Conway for, you know, dishing the candidates. Is she just going to be allowed to do it until the day that he loses the White House? Is he going to be able to use her position? Okay.
I think so, yeah. I think that's why she does it. I don't think she faces any consequence.
So I want to move on to this new rule that I want to bring up. And if there are any topics that you want to make sure we cover today, you know, you just have to throw them in, but usually you leave that ball in my court. So, but if this is a different show, let me know.
Okay.
So they just did the, Trump just signed off on will allow health workers to refuse abortion and sex reassignment services based on conscience or religious beliefs. And that this is coming out of this new conscious and religious freedom division that was created by the Trump administration. Are you familiar with what mm-hmm. I'm talking about?
Only
what
slightly.
Okay.
I saw this pop up. I haven't had a chance to really dive into it.
Okay. So if you say it is against your conscious or religious beliefs to do an abortion or to do assisted suicide, which is very interesting, you know, because I don't know how many states, but there are a number of states now that have assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
This smacks of forcing your belief systems on somebody else. That, you know, you get to say, my God thinks it's a bad thing. What do you think would happen? If somebody said, my religious belief system is I cannot save the life of somebody who is a known hater. It goes against my religious belief systems.
Yeah.
And they let him
Well, know. Here's, yeah. Well, that's not good. I might surprise you a little bit though on this one. I'm not, I am reflexively uncomfortable with the idea of, a healthcare provider. Let me preface this first with this. I wonder with anything like this, if it is a solution in search of a problem, because I would be curious how common it is for example, someone to be a healthcare provider to be forced to participate in an abortion against their will. I mean, I don't know where that happens, you know, like if there's some hospital somewhere where, you know, they're forcing an ER doctor to spend a couple hours over at Planned Parenthood or something helping out. You know what I mean? It seems unlikely to me that this is something that is a problem to begin with. Now, having said that, do I think someone who morally and ethically objects to abortion, and I am pro-choice, but do I think someone who morally and ethically, for religious reasons or just they think it's murder, whatever it is, you can be pro-life and be non-religious, whatever their reasoning is, do I think they should be forced to participate in an abortion? Of course not. Now, where it gets a little tricky is if it's a situation where the life of the mother is at stake if the abortion doesn't happen, and you have a healthcare provider and it's the only healthcare provider available in that moment, in that setting, who can get it done, and they're refusing because they, according to their belief system, it would be preferable to let the mother die than to perform an abortion. That I have a problem with. But I generally don't think that, no, I don't think in the broad sense, in a perfect world, I don't think medical providers should be forced to participate in things that are objectionable to them for religious reasons or otherwise. I may not agree. I might think it's kind of silly, but I'm not interested in forcing anyone. I'm certainly not interested in forcing anyone to participate in an abortion who doesn't want to. But again, does that even actually happen? Or is something like this just red meat for the base of the Republican Party, who is obviously pro-life and pro-religious freedom, religious liberty, whatever term you want to use, which I actually support in kind of a broad sense, religious freedom and liberty. You know, I'm not necessarily
really mean that they only mean really for Christians. You do.
Well, that's
that.
True. Oh, of course. I think we all know that. They know that. They won't admit it, but that, of course, that's what they mean. They're not going to defend, well, maybe Christians and Jews, but they're certainly not going to defend Muslims or Hindus or anybody else outside of that. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, so it sounds like something that's probably unnecessary, and it's a feel-good thing for conservatives. But I will say I'm not in favor of forcing anybody by law to participate in something if it's not medically necessary in the moment. I mean, you know, if a doctor doesn't want to do an abortion, I'm sure you can find another doctor who wants to do an abortion. You know what I mean? So I'm not in favor of forcing anyone to do that either.
Well, you know, there is an interesting part to this story, which is that under the Obama administration, HHS received only about one or two complaints from health professionals saying they were discriminated against for not performing or assisting with procedures that violated their moral or religious belief. But mm-hmm. that in the past fiscal year, since the introduction of the OCR's Conscious and Religious Freedom Division, HHS has received over 300 of these complaints.
Really?
Yeah. Now, 300 is not a huge number, but in the time of Obama, it was one or two, and in a single year since they put it in place, it's been 300. So something's going on, and yeah. You know, and people are being, I'm going to say, empowered, so to speak, to say, well, I don't believe in what you're doing. Well, but you know what? You're not paid to believe in what they're doing. You're paid
right.
and trained to do a job. And if you're a nurse or you're an aide or you're something like this, because let me tell you, it wasn't all that long ago. It was within both of our memories when they were trying to say that they would not work on a gay person. Because
sure.
this will happen. Somebody will decide that they're not going to work on somebody because they are against it. And it might be a Muslim, it might be a gay, it might be a transgendered, but this legalizes bigotry. And I do believe that if we need to come up with a solution, it needs to be, you know, this hospital performs the following things. If it is against, if you need to sign a form that says, I will either participate in these things or I have it on file that I will not, and understand that might affect my scheduling and my access to hours, because we always need to have somebody on 24 hours a day who will serve any human that walks in there with a need. Now, sex reassignment surgery is not going to happen as a emergency room thing.
Right.
You know, that's not going to happen. An abortion, again, if it was the life of the mother was at risk, that's something that could come through the emergency room. Everybody in the emergency room says, oh, no, we all go to the same church down the street. Let mama die. Let the baby come in. That's what the Lord wants. That hospital is failing at its mission.
Right, right. But how often does something like that happen, you know?
Well, we don't know. I mean, they're talking about that it's a problem in rural hospitals where it's already really difficult for these people that are transgendered or LGBT or have, they already have a hard enough time that this just legalizes bigotry to a certain extent. If we need to do something, then let's do something that makes sense and make sure that the people providing healthcare services have a staff that there was always somebody on staff on every level that is necessary if an emergency had to happen. And, you know, I just do not think it is beyond their belief system that this is, you know, somebody got shot at the local gay bar and somebody says, well, I'm not going to work on them. I don't believe that those people should be allowed to live. And they're going to say, well, I'm okay because I got this law to back me up. You don't think that's going to happen in the backwoods of some redneck place where they're homophobic up the yin yang and they're, you know, their pastor praises the Lord and says things like that. That case said a lot last week, or that Trump is the most biblical president we ever had. God sent Trump to us to save America from its ways. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
But there was an article up there. Yeah. I'm like, okay, these nutcases are on the ground and real life humans will pay the price for these kind of laws. That's my case. They have to work differently.
I understand what you mean about rural hospitals. I mean, obviously, in a big city hospital, that's not likely to ever be an issue. No, but I understand what you're saying in a rural hospital. I mean, my hope would be that would be an incredibly rare thing. I mean, most Christians I know who even, you know, even if they object to someone's sexuality would not say, hopefully, you know, well, this person's gay, so let them die. I would hope that would be incredibly rare. I would hope that it wouldn't even come up. I guess maybe I'm being Pollyanna about it, but I would hope that would be an incredibly rare thing. And, you know, and if it does happen, that's obviously a very direct violation of the Hippocratic Oath. But I don't think it's a binary thing. I don't think it's a simple thing. Like I said, I don't want anyone who doesn't want to perform an abortion to have to, if it can be helped. But obviously, you know, regardless of how anyone feels about somebody's sexuality, that's a human being and they have to have care and, you know, period, you know, that's not negotiable, clearly.
Yep. So I think we've run this one for its course. So the other thing is I just want to put in that transgendered patients could also be denied certain treatments on moral grounds. And so, again, that's a little different than, you know, I'm not going to participate in baby killing. But again, you know, it's just,
it gets complicated.
There's a case of actually a transgendered man in California who sued after he was denied a hysterectomy shortly before his surgery because a religiously affiliated hospital canceled the treatment.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it is, so the discrimination is happening. And it's not just about babies. And, you know, and they're not the only. So anyways, like I said, we'll move on to the other subject that I picked up that I thought would be good for us to discuss. So I do want to ask you another question. So I have to ask, did you get a chance to check out my Mayor Pete anymore? And if so, what do you think of him?
Oh, yeah, he's an interesting guy. He seems like a centrist Democrat, but very likable, very articulate. Really, really smart guy. I like him. You know, I actually, now that I think about it, I kind of did a segment about him on my show, but it wasn't really about him. It was more about E.W. Jackson. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a religious right broadcaster who was outraged at the site of at a Pete Buttigieg campaign event. I guess Mayor Pete kissed his husband on the lips, and apparently this is threatening to destroy America, according to E.W. Jackson. And I really get a kick out of making fun of people like that. But no, but I like him. I like him. I see why you like him.
Well, you know, and of course, the other couple of funny things is, and we will be right back for our final segment of the Dr. Kevin Show. And remember, call in and share your thoughts or ask your questions, 202-570-7057.
The Real Conscious Connection, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times Radio. I'm here, as I'm always here, on the first Thursday of the month with my old cuddle buddy, Matt Connerton. I'm waiting for an oh my.
You're going to make somebody jealous. Oh my.
Oh my. What do you think? My husband or your girlfriend? Your
I don't know. whoever might be listening.
Oh, well, you know what? I don't think that either one of them, I think they both laughed their parts of their body off. I don't see them as Ben. I don't think they'd be jealous at all.
Well, I hope they don't laugh parts of their body off. That would be horrifying.
Well, you know. So anyways, that being said, so what do you think about this whole whistleblower thing that happened or is happening? It's a current story where he says that the drug company hiked the drug by 97,000% and bribed doctors to boost the sales.
Well,
Americans spend more on prescription drugs than anyone else in the world.
Yep. Go ahead.
What was that?
That was me bringing up the story for reference, and I didn't know it had an auto start, so I had
to use. Oh, okay. I didn't know if you brought in another person on the show and just forgot to introduce. Okay. I'm at the point where I'm ready to just say we need to kind of blow the whole thing up as far as the healthcare system the way it is, and maybe do Medicare for all, and or something really drastic. I just recently had a conversation with someone who used to work for an insurance company, who was telling me about just how awful they really are. You know, and how they find any excuse to deny having to pay for a procedure or medication or, you know, I'm tired of insurance companies. I'm tired of drug manufacturers. I'm tired of all of it. And, I think it's finally time to do something, drastic.
Yep. Well, I kind of, and just before we went on break, we were talking about my guy, Mayor Pete, who I'm obviously promoting and pushing and talking about as much as I can, because I would like him to actually see him get the Democratic nomination. You know, of course, then there are people saying, a 37-year-old married gay man will never get elected. Well, you know, that's the things they were saying about Obama. A black man was never going to get elected. I think that if people think that he could actually do the job that's not getting done now, large parts of it. I've thought about that. I don't know if you've thought about this. Can you imagine whoever takes Trump's place that has to walk in to a presidency and a White House with all the things that he ignored that must not getting done? I mean, some truly intelligent, high energy, very responsible people have held that office, whether I agreed with them or not, and worked 18 hours a day. And I think 18 minutes is probably on the high side on some days for him. I mean, he's taken more golf trips and vacation and step outs in 2 years than Obama did in 8 years. And
right.
Can you imagine the mess that White House is going to be when somebody's going to go in and clean up all the messes that he just didn't bother with, was just negligent. Have you ever thought about that?
I haven't thought of it quite that way. No. but I know what you mean.
I mean,
there's a lot of positions that have gone unfilled in our government, and a lot of judgeships that are still open. There's countries that we usually have ambassadors to that we don't currently have ambassadors to, which is crazy this far in to the administration. A lot of that people have just kind of forgotten about, but there's a lot of unfilled positions in our government still.
And, you know, maybe some of those positions will be decided to be unnecessary or redundant. But I'm also, again, this is why I stopped. Somebody's going to have to clean up and is going to have to go in and clean up the mess from this clown's presidency, because we know he's not working very hard at being president. And all of our evidence suggests that president is an extremely full-time job. And
yes,
he has spent more time recampaigning than he has governing since the day he took the office. I'm going to go over to this little group and say horrible and divisive things, and they're going to say, yay, and I'm going to do that instead of actually govern.
Well, that's what he loves. I mean, he loves campaigning, clearly. He loves the adoring crowds. You know, he's a live act. He's not a studio musician, Dr. Kevin. He likes to be out there live, on tour.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. I don't know why it crosses my mind, but it does. It sometimes crosses my mind that whoever is going to be up to their eyeballs in just stuff that has to get taken care of, that this idiot just pushed off, just didn't do.
Right.
Didn't pay it. The unfilled vacancies, whatever it is. I just think that we're going to find that the next guy, which is a good reason to, you know, get my mayor Pete in there, because he is 37 and he has got an awful lot of high energy. I'm not sure. I think it might kill Biden in the first 18 months to try to dig all of the crap out of the White House that's piled in the hallways. and Sanders. But that's my opinion.
Yeah.
So Medicare for all. Do you think we should be doing the more of the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, or more like the Mayor Pete, who says, let's get it on the open exchange, let people start to buy it, and know that that in itself will be a course correction with all of the abuse from the insurance companies?
Yeah, I like the Mayor Pete idea. I don't want to necessarily, do a scorched earth thing, although I was kind of talking about it while I was expressing my frustration in that way. I think the Affordable Care Act should have had a public option. And it did at one point, but that had to be taken out. I like the Mayor Pete plan, his approach to it. I do. And I think it's realistic. And I think it's, what I always tell people about healthcare, I mean, I believe that healthcare is a right, not a privilege. Absolutely. And here's the thing, and, you know, this is the argument that I have with people who think, no, it's a privilege and not everyone should get to have it. I always tell them this, you know, we live in the United States, we live in the most successful, most innovative, most prosperous country in the history of the world. And we can't figure out a way to make sure that every single American has access to adequate, or better yet, better than adequate health care, I will never accept that. And that is an underlying principle that I've always carried about this. There is no reason in this country, of all places on earth, there is no reason why in this country we can't make sure that everyone has access to health care.
Yep, I agree. I absolutely agree. And of course, you know, you and I have talked about it. I'm all about, I can't remember what amendment number it would be, but this thing has been floating around and it's got traction. It's got a number. It's almost to the point that it's going to be forced onto the ballot box of changing the double standard for Washington, D.C. around things like health care and things like this, that they don't get a private system and get it for life for one term and get all of these things. And that if they decide they're going to go after Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, if they're going to do things that hurt the average American around healthcare, then it hurts them as well. You know, because right now, la-di-da, it's a double standard, and they get treated like royalty and lauded, you know, and just think that they're better than the rest of Americans who have to deal with the healthcare market. And they're crapping all over us as they're hanging over our heads with this, because it doesn't hurt them. It may hurt them in the voting box if they're not careful, but it doesn't hurt them because they get a whole different program that is like a fatted calf. And I think it's time that we divided that fatted calf up and spread it out to all of America. Just saying.
Although Bernie, in fairness, though, I should point out, Bernie did deny that. I don't know if you watched his town hall on Fox, but he said that he seemed to indicate that it's actually somewhat of a myth that people in Congress get some sort of Cadillac health insurance. But then again, I don't know what his idea of a Cadillac health insurance plan is. So,
yeah, but they're not tied to the system that the rest of America is.
Yeah.
So whatever he says, even if it's not the golden Cadillac that it's been touted out to be, it is still something that they don't share the same trials and tribulations as the average American does around healthcare.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well,
we've got a
most
few
people
minutes.
In Congress are okay. wealthy. Well, I was just saying most people in Congress are wealthy, and if you're wealthy, you know, you're pretty much all set as far as healthcare.
Yes. So the last thing I just wanted to mention, it was one of my feel-good pieces, was did you see about the guy that was Brigham Young University? He was valedictorian, and he stood in front of his whole class and audience and everybody else and announced he was proud to be a gay son of God to a Mormon university, to a Mormon crowd from a Mormon family.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yep, I was in the Washington Post. All of these things we're talking about, for the listeners, you can come to facebook.com/bydrkevin. You can post comments underneath these. I've put all of these articles I'm referring to that Matt and I are talking about. They're all posted there. You can look at them. You can comment on the articles. You can still ask questions if you're listening to this as a replay. And Matt or I, depending on who the question's for, we'll get back to you with our thoughts or ideas. Yep. The funny thing is, he was amazed at the number of applause that he got from the audience.
Yeah. Doesn't entirely surprise me. Yeah, and it doesn't entirely surprise me, though, because Mormons, or at least the ones I've met, are pretty cool and more open than you might think. And so I'm actually not that surprised. I am pleasantly unsurprised by that.
Well, and I think that part of this is that, you know, the church takes a line, and a lot of the people, I mean, it's always going to give some of the people the right to justify homophobia and bigotry and stuff like this. And, you know, there were still things that he said in his acceptance speech that, you know, that he disagrees on the church with. But, you know, the fact that the dean who has to approve the speech knew he was coming out in it and they signed off on it, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, the difference between almost a don't ask, don't tell policy that can happen to a certain extent with the Mormons I've known, where they're like, you know, you kind of know that maybe somebody is that way and you just don't ask. And if they don't bring it up and, you know, you don't make it a church issue. And of course the church, you know, does not approve and cannot condone any kind of coming together, but he challenged that. There was a big thing that happened a couple of years ago, I think it was. I don't have all the details, but that a whole set of incoming freshmen, whatever, protested and pushed the changes they did make through BU. And then the other thing was there was a whole in the Methodist Church, you have to spend like a year to become confirmed in the church and become a church family. And They actually did. I saw an article where a whole congregation of people that had been studying for a year to become a member of the church, and I don't know what the number was, but when it came the day, they refused to do it because of the decision at the headquarters of the United Methodist Church to not allow gay ministers and to not support gay marriage. And they said, we're hoping that when our church catches up with the reality of today, that we can still get confirmed because we love our church, but we can't join it and support these policies. They're policies that hate, not a God of love.
Wow.
A whole group of these. I think a lot of them were like teenagers, young adults that were brought up, and there's something there. I don't know. I've been to a Methodist church, but I wasn't really raised Methodist, and I don't really understand. But yeah, you're seeing it. I drove by a Methodist church going up to Ogunquit, Maine, the other day. Jeff and I were going up, and there was a big, huge rainbow flag, and there was a big, all are welcome at this Methodist church sign.
Wow.
I'm like, okay.
No kidding.
I'm wondering if the Methodist church might end up actually creating a split over this.
Yeah. Oh, wild. That's encouraging.
Wow.
Getting there.
Matthew, as always, thank you for being on, and we'll talk next month.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Kevin. Thanks, everybody.